Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Okay, it's a little after 10:35 to be precise, and we're now joined by Jimmy Norman. Good morning to you, Jimmy.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
And thanks for coming along. You've been very patiently waiting outside.
Yeah, it's some morning up here, isn't it? Yeah. It's a bit blustery.
It's blustery. I think it's the river breeze blowing in has us. But it's a good old town, Drogheda, I have to say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Nice good home. Memories here.
Do you?
Oh, yeah, from a long time ago when I was a young lad, I would have hung around in Drogheda and walked around the area as well.
All right, okay. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Coolock in Dublin, and I live now in Dunboyne in County Meath. I married a girl from Meath, so...
You went native?
I went native, that's where I am now.
Okay, so that's not a huge stretch, is it? I
mean, no, from no,
Dublin.
Really,
although it does feel very unlike Dublin. I mean, it feels like you're much further away than you actually are.
Absolutely, just the river like that now, it's a bit more like the Liffey.
Doesn't it?
Reminds us of home.
Jimmy, thanks for coming in to see us. We're here to talk about a particularly special person in your life called Eivín.
Absolutely.
And I need you to tell me about her.
Eivín is our daughter, Anne-Marie and myself. Eivín was diagnosed in 2009 with a very rare form of cancer on the 22nd of January 2009. It's amazing the way you'll actually remember, you know, every single detail.
That's your 9/11. I mean, it's...
Absolutely. That's a great way of saying it, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't mean to be glib about it.
Yeah.
But you know, anytime I speak to somebody who's had something in their life like this, that the date is etched.
Absolutely.
And also the very moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which was what for you? You would be brought in to see somebody to be told.
Yeah, well, my wife Anne-Marie had suspected more than me that there was actually something wrong with Eivín. I was like the typical bloke, you know. Ah, no, no, there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And then eventually we went into Temple Street, and I say in a matter of hours, you know, our whole world was over. You know, Eivín was brought in to get a scan. They found out very soon that she had a very large tumour. She also had the tumours had spread to her lungs, so she was at stage 4 of cancer when we found out on that day, and it was incredible to watch her, because this little girl in her school uniform that we just brought in from school was up in the room, obviously away from us, you know, so that she wouldn't hear any of the stuff that was going on.
And you were told by the doctor in question in the room with Anne-Marie.
Yes.
What happens when they say something like that to you?
I was so naive. I actually had no idea, you know, that even about childhood cancer or that children got cancer, that it had to be explained to me about the tumour, you know, and it was explained to me that, and to Anne-Marie, that Eivín was at stage 4, and stage 4 is the latest stage, you know. I actually in the room at that time, you're both in your pain, you're both in different worlds at that moment. But I actually screamed so hard, I cried so hard, that the waiting room outside the office cleared, everybody went. I don't think when you hear somebody cry like that, you know, it's something that you'll never forget. So I'd say most of the people that were even around us probably didn't get out of that hospital that day without that particular memory.
It's your daughter and you're a father.
Yes.
and the relationship is so intense.
Absolutely.
And so important.
Yes.
And nothing, you know, you always want to protect and
yes.
be there.
You make all the plans, don't you?
You make all your
plans, and you have all your dreams, your future.
You
and but what really got me was the one thing I found very difficult was that when you looked at her in our school uniform, she was actually in a little tracksuit, you know, and she was
that morning.
She was sitting up in the hospital room. And you would have never thought by looking at her, you know, you'd have never thought by looking at her that there was absolutely anything wrong with her. But she was the sickest child in the hospital. She had she's such a rare form of cancer. We when we left we were moved to Cronin the following Sunday.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, we went to St. John's Ward, and I think you've been on St. John's Ward, and
I
know you've done some great work. I remember you being up there when I was actually in the hospital.
Is that right?
Yes, I remember.
It's okay.
You actually met Eivín.
Remind me.
Yeah, well, my wife's auntie and another priest wrote a book about an anti-suicide.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, and Eivín was a book signed in Croke Park.
Croke Park, I remember being there that day.
And you signed a book for Eivín, so yeah.
How old would she have been at that time?
At that time, she would have been eight, I think, around that time, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
and here we are today.
There, yeah, yeah. It's a long, long, long way, long difference, you know.
Yeah, a long time ago. But let's return to the story of Aveen then.
Absolutely.
You had to try and adjust to your new reality, which was having a very sick child, and yet all those plans are what's happening in your head?
Well, the hardest thing is that your whole life goes on hold, you know?
Yeah, of course.
We went into the hospital on the 22nd of January 2009, and we didn't come out, I don't think, till around May. You know, we were constantly, we stayed in the hospital all the time, nearly for 6 weeks solid,
yeah,
with Avian. You know, we went to St. John's Ward that Sunday. She had a Brovjak, a Hickman line inserted into her chest on Monday. And she was on chemotherapy probably, I think, by the following Friday. And they were going to wait 2 months before, or two rounds of chemotherapy before they operated on removing the tumour. But I actually think there was too much time constraints on them. I think there was too much, she was in too much danger.
Yeah.
And they operated on her then after the first round of chemotherapy, the brilliant Professor Corbley.
Yeah. And did they give you an idea of a time frame as to how much time you would have had with Aveen? Did they put a time on it, or did they say
no? They didn't.
It's finite.
Ryan, they fought with all their heart. Dr. Anna Mara and the teams fought with everything that they had to save Avian's life. The information that Aveen was, the protocol she was under, actually came from a huge hospital medical research foundation in the United States.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that I came away from the hospital, is just an absolute huge admiration for the staff and for the doctors in Crumlin Hospital.
As the treatment continued and Aveen kept the battle going.
Absolutely.
You mentioned earlier on this idea of plans, and you know, you want to walk her down the aisle, you want to go on holidays with her, you want to see her graduate from college. All Absolutely. These things you had to readjust a little bit, I'd say, to try and focus on the here and now.
Absolutely.
And you wanted to give her the best life she could have.
Yes.
And not make it too strange either. You know, you don't want to be going to Disneyland every day, because that would be abnormal. Yeah. So how did you adjust? How did you kind of make everything... You'd want to be with her every minute of the day, obviously.
Yeah, well, that was one thing I actually did. There was a strange thing happened to me as well. Avian had a massive operation to remove the tumour, and the tumour actually weighed 2.5 kilos, and she was a 7-year-old girl, and I've always said it weighed the same as the baby that she'll never have. And they removed the tumour, and she had a massive scar, and she was in, you know, she was bald, and it was amazing to look at. But when at the exact same time, I'm an aircraft mechanic, and I work for SR Techniques, and we were in ICU, Aveen, Amory and myself, and I looked at the television, and there's the job closing down. So not only was Aveen so sick, but I lost my job that I'd been working in for over 11 years.
But
that gave me the time
to
spend with Aveen. And we have twin baby girls as well, Saoirse and Roisin, and we have a son, Sean.
Yeah.
And Amory was much better than mine and them kids. I was actually terrible, just terrible. And the decision was made between myself and Amory that I would do the hospital time and that she would mind the children at home. So I actually spent an awful lot of time on St. John's Ward, and I really, really got to know Aveen very closely.
And what did you get to know about her?
There was one thing that I noticed about her, was that she was very protective of her mum, and she was very protective of people around her. She got an injection on her leg one day. The nurse was giving her injection, and it hurt her, and she squeezed my brother-in-law's hand, Jimmy Henry's hand, and Jimmy said to her, why didn't you cry that time, Aveen? And she says, well, if I cry, mommy cries. So that showed a lot of the spirit of her. And I've seen, you know, even through all of the serious operations, you know, and being on chemotherapy, which is extraordinarily tough on a young child, the resilience comes out, the fortitude, the strength. And it's actually noticeable in all the children of St. John's Ward. They change. I think they slightly grow up, because they're dealing with adults all the time, and they're dealing with very complex issues, dealing with a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And I also think that they guard their parents against the pain. Yeah. They actually guard them against
Perfectly captured that by the squeezing of the hands.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not going to show weakness, because weakness makes them cry.
Yes, and
almost becoming the adult.
That's exactly what they go like.
It's a reverse of role.
A reverse of role, and you know what, you wonder later on, after everything that happens, you wonder how much they actually go through that they didn't tell you. And that's quite incredible.
Can you take us to the last days and how you stayed sane? How did you say goodbye? How did you not end up going to the mountains and roaring again?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That can be, them thoughts cross your mind, as you know, everybody would, I can imagine, that's listening to us talking today. The very near the end, we went back in, Avian got an infection. And we went back into the hospital in February in 2010. And very soon after that, we were told that Avian had a short amount of time left to live. But we were, but they could not give us any time expectations. And that's where, you know, for the first couple of days after that, I was really, really completely lost. And the palliative care teams enter your world, and, you know, you've got a palliative care team entering your world with your child. It's not normal. They should enter the world with you, you know what I mean?
I know.
But then we were kicked back for a few days, and then my great friend Mick Rochford, who's sitting outside, he's co-founder of Avian's Pink Toy, and his brother David said, let's not sit around, you know, let's get going, let's organise events for her. And then nearly every single day, including the Fantasy up here and all sorts of events, and everybody helped us, and, you know, she met Westlife and she met loads of people and she met the president. And so we tried to fill every single day with as much, you know, joy and love and care. Yeah. And
as you're talking, distracted. As you're talking, I'm feeling a bit sick because I know how this is going to end.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I know that you're running and running and distracting and distracting.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's not good.
No, no.
I'm feeling...
It was very hard, yeah. The coming towards the end, you know, we could actually see it quite, we could see her coming towards the end. And we had a party for her on the 6th of April, 2010.
Yeah.
And she would have been, you know, it was her birthday on the 13th of that month. But we knew that she wasn't going to make it to the 13th. So we had a big birthday party for her. And even to the last day before she left us, she still... got on the bouncy castle, sat in the bouncy castle, bounced for her friends, was giving out to them and telling them to be careful. I think around 5 o'clock the following morning, Anne-Marie woke me up and she said that, you know, we to come into the room, you know, because Anne-Marie was staying with Avian most all the time to guard her. And then we knew then that the time was very short. And then we, you know, I had to watch something, and I hope nobody ever has to watch it. You know, I wish that people didn't have to see what Anne-Marie and I saw. Oh. But she went out of the world very gently, and she went out of the world in the arms of her mother and father.
Yeah. It's too sad.
I know. But we decided that, you know, that I wasn't going to let that happen, you know, that I wasn't going to let her go like that.
Yeah.
I wasn't letting Avian go that way. That wasn't the way that I'm wired or brought up.
Yeah.
I decided that, you know, we decided that, I always say that Avian's Pink Toy, the organisation, was born on St John's Ward, and that we were going to use this horrible experience to actually try and make things better for other people, that nobody had to be on their own, the way I've seen a lot of people on their own before that.
Yeah. So you wanted to make the awful experience of a family like yours, with somebody as special and beautiful as Avian was, to be as comfortable as humanly possible.
Absolutely.
And how do you do that? I mean, you raise funds. It's called Avian's Pink Tie. Why are you talking about the pink tie? You've got a pink tie on you today,
yeah.
Obviously.
Well,
why did you go for that?
Well, my brother-in-law, Sean Henry, and Mick Rochford, and a lot on the village, and Agatha Henry, my sister-in-law, and all the family in Dunboyne got it together, and they had a huge fundraiser. And at that, it was suggested by Sean that we should wear pink toys to show solidarity with Avian. And then it just became symbolic to me to always wear the pink toy. So when the battle was over, and I had, you know, decided that we were going to start up a practical support organisation for the parents of children with cancer, it just seemed so appropriate to call it Avian's Pink Toy. But, and at the very last day, I don't like saying it, but at our funeral, we asked all of the women to wear light coloured clothing, not to wear oppressive dark black clothing. And I asked all the men to wear pink toys. And when I turned down, following Avian's coffin down through the church in Dunboyne, I could see all the men in pink toys. And it's such a strong symbolic thing to me. Mm. But the abbreviation is APT, APT, you know. And yeah. But it's Avian's Pink Toy, and it's apostrophe. This is Avian's organisation.
It's all about her. And you've got a jacket with the
logo
and everything. I mean, when did Avian die?
She
what
died on the 7th of April 2010. So she barely got a year after diagnosed to live.
And how are you?
That's a good question, isn't it? these interviews, even when I'm doing the research interview for it, you go back down into that hell. You know, you go back into that awful memories. And generally, I most parents will, who's ever gone through this, will completely and utterly avoid it. But what I've done in my life, and what Anne-Marie, my wife, has done with her life, is, and with Mick Rochford and all the rest of the team, we're so busy all the time. You know, we keep ourselves so busy, and I'm so dedicated to the children of St. John's Ward.
That, and are you running away? And I don't mean that in a cruel way.
No. Remember, as I always said to everybody, you know, I'm open to any question because of I've taken this path.
So the question is, are you running away from really confronting the awfulness, the void, or are you dealing with that as well?
That's really good, because you know what, when I get interviewed, it's sometimes it can be very like a counselling session, and you actually then go back in, and most people have said to me, you know, you're still grieving terribly. And you don't generally see that in me, you know, and it's only when I go down that road. So there is probably, there's an element of running away.
By the way, no one is entitled to tell you how you're grieving.
No. That's what I always tell that to be, you
like,
know.
There's a bit of that to that.
Yeah. I'll always do that.
Yeah,
you know?
As you should. That's your business.
Absolutely.
And
I said, like, it's not completely running away either, because if you've walked the walk down St. John's Ward and open them doors, you know.
You know the score.
And then if the battle is lost, like Avian's battle was lost.
Yeah.
Very, very few parents will ever walk back down through that corridor again and go through those doors ever again. But like myself and Michael went in on Christmas Day, you know.
Did you?
Yeah. And I was in, we got Travis Fimmel, the of Ragnar fame of the Vikings, has become an ambassador for Avian's pink toy. And Ragnar came in with us last week,
good,
you know.
Lovely.
So I walked back down the walk.
Yeah, that wasn't easy.
It's not easy, and you know the amazing thing is it's not the big complex things that actually get you.
Yeah.
It was when you go into the day ward where Avian would have waited to get her Hickman line dressing changed.
Yeah.
There's a little kitchen set over in the corner where I remember distinctly sitting down and playing at that.
Yeah.
And I remember when myself and Mick were in there on Christmas, staring at the table. You know, so it's not the. The rooms, and it's actually changed much. It's changed a lot for the better. St. John's Ward.
I'd like to take the walk with you someday.
That'd be absolutely brilliant. Yeah, absolutely.
If you would let me.
Of course, I'll. If you change, Mark. Yeah. You know, I'd say you'd be absolutely delighted.
No, I'd like to do that with you, if you don't mind.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you remembered Avian today for us, and the fact that I've met her, it means a little bit more, you know.
Excellent.
But it doesn't make it any less sad, and for you to tell the story the way you do, it's you know, that's not an easy thing to do. And I don't think there'd be anyone listening today whose heart doesn't break a bit listening to your story. I'm sorry, it's not patronising.
I understand. I know that.
It's
completely.
Just very real and it's very visceral.
When we were on, I done Secret Millionaire, as you
yeah,
know,
that's right.
And there's one actually classic scene of Margaret Farley and myself, the Secret Millionaire. Margaret owns Clonard Eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And being interviewed on the Great Wall, the wall in beside Poolbeg there. And every single person I've asked, did they cry looking at it?
Yeah.
I love what the women all say they cried. The men all say they went out to make a cup of tea.
Yeah. That's an Irishman's way of saying I cried.
Yeah.
Listen, I want to wish you and Anne-Marie the very best, and keep flying the flag for Avian's
absolutely.
Memory, but also for your gorgeous children who are, I presume, thriving.
Oh, absolutely.
Did
fantastic.
You get work again, by the way?
I did, and that's been glad to hear that. I actually call it big. The really amazing thing that happens, Avian's miracles. Being allowed to come on shows like this, you know, the presentations, the things that are happening.
But even though you lost the job, allowed you to spend the time with her.
Yes.
She died, and then you got another job.
I got this. There's a company opened up in Dublin. As I was saying earlier, I'm an aircraft mechanic, and a company called Dublin Aerospace opened up on the started by Conor McCarthy, and I went back there, I think around November 2011. So I've been working there ever since.
I'm glad to hear that.
And it's amazing. They're a fantastic company.
You're happy.
Yeah, I love it. And
yeah,
and they support Avian's Pink Toy brilliantly. And they're going to, with DHL, have backed Avian's Pink Toy now.
Good.
And we're getting to land one of their aircraft. And all of the guys out of hangars that I work with and all the DHL guys are coming in on the 19th of June to do a plane pull. So everybody's joined in, you know. I don't let anybody away.
No, I can see that. Well, look, I look forward to doing the walk with you.
Well, that's
in
great.
Problem.
We'll definitely make that arrangement.
Off air. But in the meantime, Jimmy, thanks for coming in to see us, Jimmy Norman. Where should people go to? avianspinktie.ie.
Absolutely.
So it's AOIBHEANN, Avian's Pink Tie. We might do a photo together, which we can put on to our Facebook page, with a view to putting that link on so people can go there and get the information.
And there's a real good way of doing it as
Yeah,
well.
Go on.
As you spelled A-O-I-B-H-E-A-N-N, Avian, you can text it to 50300 to donate to Avian's Pink Toy.
Okay, great stuff. Listen, thanks a million, Jimmy. It's really been good to talk to you. Thanks a lot. Okay, we'll take a break.